Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We, Leeds United, have lost so many of our legends in recent times.
Cherry! Oh, he took up such a good position.
Charlton coming up into the penalty area.
It's a goal!
Oh, and what a goal! What a goal by Norman Hunter!
Lorimer coming in! 1-1!
Every time another member of that special side passes away, we all feel it as fans of this historical football club. A group of exceptional players that would no doubt set the modern game alight. A great man led them, and without him, none of it would have been possible. His name was Don Revie.
There's never a player going out on that pitch with a white shirt on that's never tried.
Fantastic when you think that we've played 38 matches, only lost two, 61 points, and Liverpool are still behind us.
They all said, that's it. They're finished, they're over the hill, they're too old, and this, that and the other. And they went 29 matches from the beginning of the season without defeat.
I'm Ralph Ineson, actor and lifelong Leeds supporter. And in the next hour, we'll pay tribute to Don Revie's remarkable team of the 60s and 70s. And the talented young men he assembled to become not only champions of England, but European greats. You're listening to Revie's Angels on TalkSport. To give a fair and accurate portrayal of the type of manager and man Don Revie was, it felt important to have someone involved in this programme who played under him as an integral member of the squad, knew him inside out, and has legendary status. That man played an incredible 577 games for Leeds between 1966 and 1983, twice became their manager, and still today attends every Leeds game as an ambassador home and away. Former tricky winger, Teddy Gray.
Oh, good footwork by Gray, still going! Oh, what a masterly goal by Eddie Gray!
We met with Eddie at Elland Road, where he took us through his wonderful Leeds journey and spoke to us in depth about Don Revie. You'll hear from him throughout the programme.
Don was right up there with the best managers the countries have ever produced. You know, when you look back, he was like trying to act like a father figure. He taught us, you know, be respectful to people, show people respect. And Don did that.
It wasn't until 2012 that a statue in honour of Don Revie was unveiled. It was fitting that this was where our conversation with Eddie Gray started, and he described how his journey with Don began.
When I was growing up in Glasgow and playing football for the Glasgow schoolboys and the Scottish schoolboys, late 50s, early 60s, I'll be honest with you, I'd never heard of Leeds United. It's true, because they were an unfashionable club as far as I was concerned. But when I played with the schoolboys, there was a scout one day come up, his name was John Barr, to my dad, and asked me if I'd go down and visit Leeds. And this was in 1962. And I went down, and that's the first time I met Don Revie. And that made my mind up that I was going to join Leeds United. I mean, I'd been to all the big clubs in the country, and but you know, I told him I was going to Glasgow Celtic, but once I visited Leeds and met Don Revie, I thought, that's the man and the club I want to play for.
A pragmatic tactician and astute man manager, Don Revie built a legacy at Leeds United, which still exists to this day. It all started for him back in 1944 as a youth level footballer, leading the line for second division sides Leicester and Hull, before earning a move to Manchester City in 1951, where manager Les McDowell deployed him as a deep-lying centre-forward, a first in English football. He went on to play for Sunderland, and in 1958 got his move to Leeds in the First Division and was made captain. It was hoped that his creativity and leadership would keep them up. It worked. Even back then as a player, his personality shone through on the pitch. Don's son, Duncan, who sadly passed away in 2016, spoke to TalkSport about what he was like as a man and father.
Well, he was one of those, he was a great man manager. I mean, that goes without saying. Mm. And so with myself and my sister, if we were getting too big for our boots, he'd have you down on the floor, in seconds. And similarly, if you were on the floor, he'd have you up on the ceiling in seconds. Mm. And he was incredibly generous, very loving. And my mum, the same. So we were very privileged in growing up, not just in a household with a very famous father. It's completely wrong, the image though, of dad being made from granite. Yeah, he was strong. Yes, he was powerful. But he was a great father and a wonderful, wonderful human being.
Don was offered the role of player manager at Leeds in March 1961, when they were struggling in Division 2. He immediately made his mark on and off the pitch, instilling a set of values and practices which would serve the club well in future years. It was December 1962 when Eddie Gray, a month short of his 15th birthday, made his life-changing journey by train from Glasgow to Leeds.
I first came down when I was 14, and it was a winter in 1962. And we used to train where the car park is, the other side of this stand, the other side of the ground. That was a training ground called Fullerton Park. And there was a little dressing room up there. And traditionally at Christmas, boys from all over the country come for trials. So I was like one of their boys. But just before we went out for a trial, Don came into the dressing room and pulled me out. And he says to me, "Come here, you're training with me the day with the first team." I was only 14. So I trained with the first team. So that impressed me right away. When I got the ball, went up to Jack Charlton by him, and he booted me up in the air.
Don set about transforming the Yorkshire club from the ground up. He developed a successful youth academy, taking as his inspiration the achievements of Manchester United under Matt Busby.
Manchester United had well and truly done it. They were supreme soccer champions of Europe. At last, Matt Busby, the maestro of Manchester United, had groomed a team great enough to beat Europe's best.
Here's son Duncan again.
This animosity, supposedly, between Leeds and Manchester United fans, I don't know where that's come from, because when Dad first became manager at Leeds, the first person he went to see was Matt Busby and asked him to have half an hour, and Matt spent the whole day with him, had lunch, and Dad never forgot that. And then he passed that on to other managers. And in fact, when Dad was on This Is Your Life with Eamon Andrews, Sir Matt was the final guest. So there's a great affinity between Leeds and Manchester United.
Revy had taken over in adverse circumstances. The club was in financial difficulty, and in 1961-62, only a win in the final game of the season saved the club from relegation to Division 3. But in time, the faith in youth paid off, as the likes of Eddie Gray, Peter Lorimer, Norman Hunter and Paul Reaney came through the ranks.
I'm picking up good vibrations.
Confidence of some of these deep youngsters. Wonderful to watch. Just look at them.
Jones turning it down for Lorimer.
By Norman Hunter.
Sport journalist Richard Sutcliffe, who wrote the excellent Revy, Revered and Reviled, spoke about how Don shaped his team with young players.
Don went into Scotland and signed Pete Lorimer when he was 15. You know, obviously, Billy, he took under his wing as a teenager on his debut. Eddie Gray, he brought down from Scotland. Norman Hunter, he got, you know, he was on the staff at Leeds as a kid. You know, like Paul Reaney. If you get them young, if you get them when they're 25, 26, then they're grown men by then. If you get them at 15, 16, you can mould them. And he was a father figure. I think if you looked at everything, obviously they were fantastically talented footballers, but they were a band of brothers.
Revy created a family atmosphere and a sense of togetherness at the club, and felt it was important to be a father figure and role model to his younger players, as author Anthony Clavani explains.
He transformed the way that managers behave. I mean, he turned the football club into a family, so that everybody in the football club, whether it was the star players or the tea lady, were treated the same by Don. You know, he'd be talking, be nice to everybody. He'd send flowers to the tea ladies on their, you know, birthdays. He'd be friendly and generous and respectful. He didn't allow anyone to get above themselves. And that was the Revy philosophy. Don't put yourself before the side. No room for egos, fancy dams. But also within the club, you know, it wasn't a question of preening prima donnas. I mean, when you think of the talent that they had, you know, the Bremners, the Giles, Terry Cooper, Alan Clark, you know, you just go through every single player. They had immense ability, but none of them had the kind of egos that I think are sadly associated with some of the superstars of today.
After new investments at board level, Revy was able to spend £25,000 on Everton's Scotland international Bobby Collins, who was then made captain. Other arrivals included former Manchester City teammate Billy McAdams, forward Ian Lawson, and left-back Cliff Mason. Don played his last game in March 1962, before concentrating entirely on management. Revy eventually took Leeds back to the top flight in 1964, and so began one of the most exciting periods in the club's history.
Only
4 now. Leeds take it quickly. And it's a goal! Herrimer!
Leeds United win Wimbledon number one in English football at the moment.
One we've set our hearts on for 8 years now is this league championship.
You're listening to Revy's Angels with me, Ralph Ineson, on TalkSport. Welcome to Revy's Angels on TalkSport with me, actor and Leeds fan, Ralph Ineson.
They are the greatest in the land.
So, in 1964, we were back in the big time, and Don had already made a massive impact. As well as transforming the youth academy and creating a family atmosphere, he also had changed the colour of the shirts to white to be like Real Madrid, and got rid of the owl on the club badge. Revy's son Duncan said his dad always had big plans to transform Leeds.
Bottom of the second division, no money, an absolute tip of a ground. And he taking me on the pitch and looking around. And this was a minefield. It was just horrible. And he said, now, in years to come, son, there'll be boxes. People will come to games at 11 o'clock. They'll have lunch. There'll be shopping malls. And I'm looking around at this ground. And I thought, he's mad.
Don treated his players with trust. But author Anthony Clavani explains how he was always aware of what was going on outside of their football activities.
He wanted to control everything. You know, whether this is a good or bad trait, in some ways it's a great trait because the players all saw him as this kind of surrogate father in a way, particularly the young players who came from Scotland from, you know, as teenagers, like Eddie Gray, Peter Lorimer and so on. You know, for example, he would say to them, you know, I don't want you going off into nightclubs, having loads of girlfriends. I want you to marry and settle down. And, you know, for him, you know, that seems like a weird thing. And you couldn't do it in this day and age. But, you know, it's very old fashioned, obviously. And, you know, he wanted control. He wanted control over what the players ate. You know, if they went out to the pub, Jack Charlton, Billy Bremner, they liked to drink and they liked to smoke. When they were caught in a pub in Leeds, Don Revie had heard about it because people would tell him, or maybe had his spies, I don't know. And they got into trouble. He controlled their leisure time.
Leeds legend Eddie Gray recalls what he was like with the players.
If you got a girlfriend, Don wanted you to settle down as quick as possible so your life was stable. Most of the boys came from all over the country. And I think Don always think it would help them settle down. They would marry local girls, so they'll not want to leave Leeds United. There was always thoughts in Don's mind. Don was very clever, you know. Think, well, if he marries a Leeds girl, he'll not want to leave Leeds. And so it turned out, you know.
From the outset, Revy implemented radical new ideas around exercise, nutrition and team bonding. Leeds podcaster Dan Moylan tells us more.
It was based on simple things, I think. Very, very important to have that DNA, I think. And Revy did it around things like bingo and carpet bowls, where they would all get involved and have these shared team experiences. Because we know that dressing rooms can fall apart when you get individual personalities that start to poison the well, if you like. And there was none of that at Leeds. They were all as one. They were all united around the common cause, and that was their leader. Revy was their leader, and they all got behind him.
Revy's attention to detail became notorious, and he installed a new philosophy and DNA. However, what attracted the most attention during his time managing Leeds is the infamous dossiers, which fascinated the media. MP Chris Evans, writer of a new biography on Revy, explained how unique his approach was at the time.
The dossiers he created, sending scouting missions out, coming back, you know, all this opto, he sits all the time. The amount of statistics we've got in football is unbelievable. That started with him. In 1969, he says to the board, we can't afford to pay the players much longer. They've won the championship, they're going to watch more money. Why don't we get a big firm to emblazon a name across their shirt? He says there's going to be executive boxes there. He talks about all-seater stadiums. He's talking about these things in the mid-60s, and they've come to pass now.
It was something the players bought into too. Even Jack Charlton, who was known to be quite the cynic.
We had arguments with Sid Owen over football, but at least we were discussing things about the game that had never happened before. I had my differences with Don, and Don said to me one day, OK, you organise the back and leave the rest to me.
Eddie Gray spoke to us about Don's incredible attention to detail on the opposition and how he was advanced in his approach.
People now should look back. Teams do it day in, day out now. Don was way ahead of his time. Way ahead of his time. That's what other people couldn't understand. It didn't bother us because we got a lot of information about the opposition, teams we were playing against, how they played, how they lined up. Now, that is commonplace now. And, you know, back then, Don, outside our football club, get ridiculed for it. They should look back and Don and think he was the man that started all this. You know, actually analysing things. You know, he would send people to games and he would tell them to write a report about the game. He would study it himself. People talk about the great managers and I don't think Don gets mentioned enough.
Revy was also known for being incredibly superstitious.
When we were walking down the tunnel, you know, I used to have to find a place to jump in because you used to have to all like to go in a certain position and, you know, as you're walking out, I'll go at number three, I'll be four in the line. I just used to have to find a place because I wasn't superstitious at all, you know. But Don was superstitious, yeah.
Although Don's lead side were now blessed with talented players, the likes of Bobby Collins, Johnny Giles and Billy Bremner, there were also a side that early into Don's reign was earning a reputation for having an aggressive style.
And the Queen is in trouble, and the Queen is sent off!
Oh, my goodness, by Jack Charlton, and the referee surely is going to take some action here. The game looked as though it might erupt before half-time, there were one or two niggly moments.
And a fight going off the ball between Hunter and Lee. The fists were flying, and that's been brewing for quite some time.
In the summer of 1964, the Football League's official journal featured an article on the rise of dirty tactics and cynical football. They published the disciplinary table from the previous season, with Leeds United at the top, and said, "This is the dirtiest team in the country." The Dirty Leeds label was well and truly born, however, after the infamous Battle of Goodison Park in 1964, an FA Cup tie that had turned into one of the most brutal contests to ever take place in English football. Charles Mills, a fan since the 1950s and trustee of Everton in the community, was at the game and has vivid memories of it, including a ferocious tackle by Leeds defender Willie Bell.
We had a winger called Derek Temple, and Derek was going for a ball. Leeds left back, a fellow called Willie Bell, came at him with his foot at chest height and just felled Derek with a boot just under his heart. At that point, my dad got up, and for the first and only time in my life, I heard my dad swear. And it was a dreadful, dreadful foul. Temple was stretched off. The crowd were almost, in a state of rebellion. There was all, you know, you could almost feel a riot coming on. Willie's was by far and away the worst foul I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I don't think it was on the television, so there's probably no television coverage of it. But it was a criminal assault, you know, it was GBH. No other way of describing it. So, yeah, fond memories.
The on-pitch battle was so explosive that for the first time in a league match, the referee was forced to cancel it and send both teams to the dressing room to calm down. Charles Mills felt Don Revy got exactly what he wanted from his players and revelled in it.
And it looks to me as if it's broken out again! It's broken out again, and now this time, a complete free-for-all. A match that was being played in such a good spirit has been completely spoiled by a very nasty outbreak indeed between two former England players.
I think it went with Revy. You know, that was what he wanted his players to play. That was the type of player he had, and he kind of glorified in it. You know, the Norman Hunters of the game and the Willie Bells and the Paul Reenies. Charlton himself, Charlton was a dirty player. I think he revelled in it. It probably culminated in the public eye at the Battle of Goodison.
After this game took place, whenever Leeds played, there was a sense that opposition teams took to the pitch expecting and preparing for a fight. This was the beginnings of the Dirty Leeds tag. Podcaster Dan Moylan told us why he felt the Yorkshire club in particular were picked on because of their physical style.
I think it just goes back to geography and quirks of that and the personalities involved. And I think maybe Leeds were more overt with it in the things that they did. They adopted kind of an ultra pragmatic, ultra professional approach to it. And it just wasn't loved by the media, who held other sides in higher regard. I think we can't discount the role of the media in how Revy's side were taken and how they've been remembered historically.
Eddie Gray felt Leeds were simply able to match others physically, and it was clubs down south who had an issue with it.
Our team weren't as physical, you know, just the same physicality as any other side that played. I mean, it's just that our side could match teams physically, but they could also play if they wanted to play football. And I think that's... And actually, when you look back, it really stemmed for down south. The London clubs were resented at the time, you know, because they thought they were dominant
you know, and with the Manchester clubs. Our club were just the same as any other football club. There was a lot of, you know, teams that had physical players. The game's always been physical, but I don't think it's as hard physically now as it was. Players don't get away with things now.
By the mid-1960s, Don Revie's Leeds had become a force to be reckoned with. Their return to the top flight had been an impressive achievement, a top two finish in the league, an FA Cup final appearance, and 100 goals scored. They had some hugely talented players, and in particular the midfield was something very special. Journalist Richard Sutcliffe was in awe of Revie's talented Crawford players.
Billy did his thing, and it was absolutely fantastic, and people went with him, and an inspirational captain. But I think Johnny was always seen as the brains of that team. But what a combination in midfield. And then you've got Eddie Gray on the left of that midfield and Peter Lorimer on the right, who's pushing forward as well. And, you know, record goal scorer for the club. And you look at that midfield and you just think, you can't actually better that. You know, there's been some fantastic midfields. Leeds had a great midfield when they won the title in 92 under Howard, where you had Gary Speed, David Batty, Gary McAllister and Gordon Strachan. But even that midfield wasn't up to that Revie midfield, because that was just sensational. You know, you've got absolutely everything that you need in a midfield is in those four players.
Still to come on this special programme on legendary Leeds manager Don Revie, we'll hear some opposing opinions on the Dirty Leeds label and how Don led his side to glory.
Their halo shines not so brightly as perhaps the halos of some others. In that respect, that's sad, because the tables don't lie. That's not fiction. That's not reputation. That's achievement.
You're listening to Revie's Angels on TalkSport.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Revie's Angels with me, Ralph Ineson, on TalkSport. During our meeting with Eddie Gray, we sat pitchside at Ellen Road in the Don Revie stand, and he spoke with great enthusiasm about brilliant captains Billy Bremner and Bobby Collins.
I used to watch Bobby playing for Celtic, and Bobby was a great player, and he went to Everton. And when Don signed him, Bobby would be 35, I think, and everybody thought he's finished. But when Bobby came here, he became Footballer of the Year. And he was a man, I think Bobby started the team being able to compete with the best sides, because Bobby was a winner. He was always a winner at Celtic. He came to Leeds, he taught all the players how to win. And Bobby had no fears. He was only 5'3" and took a size 4 and a boot. But I think he's the most important player that's ever walked through the gates of Ellen Road.
Bremner.
Oh, beautiful goal! What a superlative goal by Bremner! Oh, what a wonderful goal by Bremner! An overhead kick from Jack Charlton's flick.
Billy was a character. Billy was a one-off. Great, great footballer. You know, if we were one down in a game, Billy would forget his midfield duties. I'm going to get the equaliser. If we were drawing, I'm going to get the winner. nine times out of ten, Billy would do it. See, Don was very clever. I think Don got more out of Billy than any other manager, I don't care who they were, could have. He was very clever in his handling of Billy. And that's why Billy's statue's out there.
In defence, Jack Charlton was an absolute warrior. Leeds-based author Rob Badshy gave us a revealing insight into just how important he was for the club.
Charlton coming up into the penalty area. It's a goal!
He was talented but ill-disciplined. So he would go off, you know, tactically ill-disciplined. He would go off and run upfield. But Reevey sort of managed to say to him in 62-63, having tried to sell him a couple of times, if you screw the nut, you'll play for England, which seemed a laughable prospect. You know, he felt that his whole career was going nowhere. But he also was one of the very first players to get an FA coaching badge, you know, in his 20s. So he knew that fundamentally what Reevey brought to the team was the right approach, that this was finally a new way of working that was going to, you know, fulfil all his ambitions. And he did screw the nut, knuckle down.
Eddie Gray described to us how brilliant Norman Hunter was at the back alongside Charlton.
Norman Hunter was one of the best defenders that ever played the game. I mean, ever played the game. I think Norman Hunter was a better club player than Bobby Moore.
Bobby Moore led England up to the Royal Box to receive the Jules Rimet Cup and the winners' medals. To be here as winners of the FA Cup has often been described as the summit of a footballer's ambition. How much greater was the triumph they enjoyed now?
Bobby Moore was a better international player. And I think Norman acknowledged that. But club player, week in, week out, Norman was terrific. And as I say, he used to ping that ball with his left foot, cross field passes, left to right. You know, and he was like spot on all the time. No, he was a terrific player and, you know, a great lad, you know. And he loved the football. I think he was sort of somebody that Don hung his hat on, you know, like he knew every week what he was going to get for Norman, you know, and that's why he's such a big name at our football club and such a big name in, you know, in English football.
But Don still had work to do to reach the very top. They finished fourth in 1966-67, lost to Chelsea in the semi-final of the FA Cup, then got to the final of the Intercities Fairs Cup, but were defeated 2-0 by Dinamo Zagreb. Revy was criticised for his negative tactics, something that would become a recurring theme. The late, great Norman Hunter spoke to us a few years back on the team being too conservative at times.
Looking back, I thought Don Revy was brilliant. You know, when I came as 15 and a half, he was the man. He was a player, then he became manager. But looking back, for what we had, we were a bit too cautious. You know, we had dossiers on players. You know, what we should have done, we should have took care of the set pieces, throw-ins, which we could have done, and then just said, go out and beat them.
It's a kind of magic. It's a kind of magic.
With his team coming close, but failing to land a trophy, Don brought in a spiritual healer to lift a curse he believed had been placed on Elland Road, so that there would be no bad luck for the 1967-68 season. He also nearly doubled the club's record transfer, buying Sheffield United striker Mick Jones for £100,000, who would replace the frequently injured Peacock as the main centre-forward.
Will this be the long raking kick? It's not, but there's Jordan on the far side! And Jones! Oh, and a beautiful goal!
Don finally won his first trophy, with Leeds lifting the League Cup, beating Arsenal in the final.
And that was that. It was all over. Leeds had won by a disputed goal. Their supporters were delighted with the result. Still, the League Cup was on its way home to Leeds, the first major prize for a Yorkshire side in 33 years.
They then were successful in Europe, winning the Intercities Fairs Cup, but still only managed a fourth place finish in the league.
And the whistle goes. Leeds United, so often runners-up, have won the Fairs Cup. The first time a British team has won it. We've had four runners-up from England, London, Birmingham City twice, and Leeds United runners-up the last time and now winners of this trophy, the Fairs Cup.
The following season, Don decided to fully focus on winning the championship. His approach worked. Following a 5-1 defeat in October against Burnley, they went the rest of the season unbeaten and lifted their first league title.
Fantastic when you think that we've played 38 matches, only lost two, 61 points, and Liverpool are still behind us. Well, the highlights for me are the consistency of the side. Over the past 5 or 6 years, they've been very consistent. They only lose two in the best league in the world out of 38 matches so far is extremely good.
April 1969, Leeds United manager Don Revy and his team are the new league champions. It's a milestone in the club's history and a night of celebration.
They secured the championship with a goalless draw against title challengers Liverpool at Anfield After the game, Revy led his players back onto the pitch to applaud the Liverpool fans, who in turn applauded the Leeds team. Incredible.
Well, the memories will live with me forever, that memory, because Billy Bremner took our team when we won the championship to the Leeds supporters, about 10,000 of them on the left-hand side of the ground, behind the goal. Then he brought them back to me, and I said, Bill, take them to the cop. Oh, I don't fancy that, boss. I said, go on, take them. So he walked the team, and I can see them walking now towards the cop, and the cop, 27,000, went deathly silent, and they let him get within 6 yards with the team of the cop. Then they all started, champions, and they wouldn't let the players off the pitch for 7 minutes. And they'd just lost the championship that night, and they roared and roared, and oh, it was a tremendous reception we got.
Eddie Gray recalls his manager instructing the side to walk towards the car.
We thought it was daft. Well, I thought, you're kidding us on. We've just won the championship at Anfield, and you want us to walk towards the cop. And we started walking towards the cop, very gingerly, it must be said at first. But then the cop started chanting champions, you know, and it was a tremendous moment, that. And then it rang around the whole ground. They started chanting champions. So it was I think there was a lot of respect between Liverpool and Leeds United, you know, in those days. I mean, people talk about rivalry, and now, you know, like Leeds United fans talk about Manchester United, but our biggest rivals then were the Liverpool side, probably Chelsea and Arsenal sides. Obviously, Manchester United were always a great club and a great team. But we had some tremendous battles with Liverpool, you know. I'm talking about football battles, I'm not talking about fighting. We should look back and we find memory, and that's why that instance when we won the championship for the first time at Anfield, it was a bit strange when Don says, just walk down to the cop, Don says they'll give you a great reception. And he did, and he was right.
This was a team that played with flair and skill, but was still seen by many across the country as a dirty side. Former Leeds manager Howard Wilkinson spoke to us about how the media would often focus on the wrong aspects of Revy's team.
What the media did was take some of the traits of his teams and his players and choose, as it were, to highlight those rather than the big picture, which was one of huge success of, in particular, in Don Revy's case, huge loyalty by his players to each other and to the club, you know. The media like a fight.
Leeds podcaster Dan Moylan thought the dirty Leeds label was harsh.
It's unfair looking back on it because all the teams were at it. You know, you look at the 1970 FA Cup semi-final when Leeds and Chelsea kicked lumps out of one another and Chelsea were equally culpable of the physical aspects of the game. But it's just one of those tags that sticks with the side. And I think not being from London, being from up north, probably swayed the media. And the media was a lot more persuasive, the print media at that time. I think it's just one of those things that happened to stick due to the coverage in the papers of that. Leeds were hated by the London media and, you could argue, still not particularly well thought of today.
That 1970 FA Cup final has been re-shown many times and talked about as the dirtiest match ever.
Oh, my goodness, the feet. I think it was McCready there. On Bremner, possibly. The feet were really high then and the referee's just allowed it to go on. That had to be dangerous play, yes, by Eddie McCready. On Billy Bremner.
Ron Chopper Harris was part of the Chelsea side and spoke to us about the infamous tie.
Amazing thing was, I think there was only a couple of bookings when you see some of the tackles that, you know, if that had happened the day, you'd have been banned for life, wouldn't you? You know, people could launch themselves in and tackle. If you look at the two sides, the Leeds side and the Chelsea side, they had a back four of like Norman and Jack that took no prisoners, and the same with Chelsea. We had a back four that were very aggressive and launched themselves in like you couldn't do today sort of thing.
And there goes the final whistle, and Chelsea have won the cup, having come from behind twice at Wembley and behind here at Old Trafford tonight.
A lot of rival fans still to this day talk about Don Revy's dirty Leeds, but was this a somewhat unfair label? Author Rob Badgley gave his view on why the Yorkshire club in particular were targeted for their overly physical style.
The FA in-house newspaper, the FA News, published in the summer of 1964 a league table of the worst transgressors in English football, and Leeds were at the top of it. Having said that, they hadn't had a single player sent off in their promotion season. They'd had one player suspended, Bremner, for dissent rather than for foul play. Whereas Manchester United, for example, had had three players sent off that season, but it transpired, though it wasn't easily explained in the FA's copy, it was a sanction for the whole club. So although, you know, it's pretty reprehensible to have a lot of youth players sent off and youth players, you know, having problems with discipline on the field, it didn't really tell the whole story that Leeds' first team had not been a particularly filthy team. They had been hard and compromising.
Former Leeds manager Howard Wilkinson spoke to us about whether Don cared what others thought.
In terms of the media, they treated him unfairly at times, didn't recognise the achievements as much as they should have done at times. Would that bother him or the players? Probably not. In fact, sometimes if that sort of feeling's out there about you, it actually makes you stronger. You become closer because you recognise that there is an us and that there is out there a lot more of them. Heading for a
showdown. You're listening to Revy's Angels here on TalkSport. And coming up, we'll hear about Don's Leeds departure and his fierce rivalry with Brian Clough.
I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. Now, there is no other reply to that question.
No,
but because you had won the league.
Yeah, but there's no way you could win it better.
Why not?
No.
But that's the only hope I've got.
We'd only lost four matches, isn't it?
But that, well, I can only lose three.
No.
I couldn't give any other answer.
Welcome to the final part of this special documentary reflecting on the career of legendary Leeds manager Don Revy, with me, Ralph Ayton. By the late 1960s, Leeds were a formidable force, but were often also talked about as nearly men. Don had targeted the treble in 1969-70 and came close to achieving his aim, only to fail on three fronts, finishing second in the league to Everton, losing the 1970 FA Cup final, and exiting the European Cup at the semi-final stage. The following season, they missed out on the title by a single point to Arsenal after controversial refereeing in a game against West Brom, which left Don Revy fuming.
Pass intercepted, but Sagan is offside. The referee waving him on! Brown is going straight through, taking on Sprake. And the goal by Eston, and Leeds will go mad! And they've every right to go mad, because everybody stopped with the linesman's flag. Don Revy on the pitch, the linesman going to talk to the referee. Don Revy, a sickened man. Look at him looking up to the heavens in disgust.
Although furious with the outcome, a year later they got one over on Arsenal, beating them in the FA Cup final.
And Leeds have won the FA Cup for the first time. They group around Don Revy. The Leeds fans go crazy.
There was a real unity in this Leeds team and family spirit that saw them through year after year. Whatever adversity they faced, they would come back stronger. And this was thanks to Don. From the late 1960s, Leeds were always in the running for the league championship. From 1964-65, their first season in the top division after promotion, to 1972-73, Leeds had won five trophies and finished runners-up in 10. During this time, they had what some might argue an unfair reputation of being too aggressive and playing negative football. Two home games back-to-back in 1972 heavily disputed this idea. The first was a 5-1 thrashing of rivals Manchester United, followed by a 7-0 thumping win over Southampton.
Lorimer is underneath it. In comes Jones! Eddie Gray's run on the left, a typical run. Balancing himself beautifully as he was attempted to be tackled by Stokes. The long cross, Lorimer's header, down to Jones, who put it in for number seven. To say that Leeds are playing for Southampton is the understatement of the season. Poor Southampton just don't know what day it is. Every man jack of this Leeds side is now turning it on. Oh, look at that! It's almost cruel.
In the final moments against Saints, chants of Ole were heard as supporters cheered every pass. There were 39 consecutive at one point, in a game that saw Peter Lorimer score a hat-trick and Alan Clark net twice, with Jack Charlton and Mick Jones grabbing the others. 1971 saw Leeds win the Fairs Cup once again, this time beating an impressive Juventus side at Elland Road. The following season, Leeds were nearly men once again, losing two cup finals to Sunderland and Milan just 8 days apart. The late excellent Leeds defender Trevor Cherry, who sadly passed away in 2020, told TalkSport how everything went right for Sunderland during that FA Cup final.
To be fair, on the day, not many times it happened, but Sunderland outfought us. They battled harder. They did get a few breaks, which I think the lads, I'm close to Dave Watson and players like that, they'll admit that themselves. But everything went right for them on the day, but their attitude, and they actually out-battled us. And I think, to be honest, if we'd have got one goal, we might have taken them for three or four, but we didn't get that one goal, so that's history, if you like.
At the end of the 1972-73 season, a dark cloud formed over Elland Road, and it concerned Revie himself. He was on the point of leaving the club for a lucrative offer from Everton, and there were weeks of speculation about his future. Olympiacos also courted Don during the summer, but in the end he changed his mind and remained at Leeds for what proved to be his final and title-winning season.
And the final whistle goes! Leeds United, skipper by Billy Bremner, have done it. And Don Revie, the man who's guided Leeds, takes a handshake. And the crowd rising to this amazing Leeds United side.
Trevor Cherry recalled that ahead of that victorious campaign, Revie decided the shackles were well and truly off and was focused on doing whatever was humanly possible to win the championship.
Yeah, the boss said he set his sights on the title then. Nothing was going to affect it. In fact, a true story, we played Man City. I think it was the 11th game in. I think we'd won 8 and drawn 3. And in Man City away, and the gaffer's team talk about quarter past 2 was, if you lads are not going to do it for me, I'm going to buy players who are.
Leeds stormed to the title with a 5-point lead over Liverpool. And at the time, Revie didn't realise he'd be leaving his beloved club. On May the 1st, England announced the sacking of Alf Ramsey. In July, Don agreed a 5-year contract to be the new manager. Eddie Gray told us he was surprised at the time.
I know the England job doesn't come up very often, but when we won the league 73-74, I thought Don would have stayed on to have a go at the European Cup. We went to the European Cup final under Jimmy Armfield. I think one of the reasons Don left is because he had all the players for 10, 12 years, some a little bit longer. I mean, you're talking about 74, I joined in 62, 63, Peter 62. I think he thought a lot of the players are getting older.
Revie made recommendations to the board as to who should replace him. He suggested Bobby Robson, who declined, and Johnny Giles. But once the board knew Billy Bremner was interested too, they feared appointing one or the other would split the camp. Johnny Giles gave his perspective on it to Talk Sport.
I was really surprised at that, because it never crossed my mind that actually I wanted to finish playing. I was 33. I'd had an injury the year before, but I was okay. I was playing again. I had no great ambitions to be manager of Leeds United. And he said he was recommending me. And as it turned out, the board turned down his recommendation. It left me in a position where I was turned down for the job that I hadn't applied for.
A shock name was subsequently chosen as the new Leeds United manager, Revie's great nemesis, Brian Clough.
I think they've been champions, and they've not been good champions in the sense of wearing the crown remarkably well. I think they could have been a little bit more loved. You know, there are a lot of people jealous of people who are successful, but having said that, apart from that, Leeds were disliked and are disliked. And it's only been the last 12 months where they've started to earn, you know, a little bit of applause from everybody. I want the job because they're a top club, if not the top club. And I want to be a manager of the top club.
Clough's time at Leeds lasted just 44 days. A complete disaster. So much so, a novel was written about it called The Damned United by David Peace, followed by the film with the same name, released in 2009. Clough and Revie were seen as bitter enemies with their opposing styles. David Peace spoke to us about how the rivalry started.
Clough looked up to Revie and to Shankly. When he took over, particularly at Derby, he really aspired to turn Derby into a kind of new Leeds United, and he kind of revered him. And you know, there is an argument that when Leeds came to play Derby County, Clough was really excited and was really couldn't wait for this moment, and was, you know, longing to meet Revie and to have a chat and to you know, kind of almost become friends. But he felt, you know, Revie brought the Leeds team, and Revie, you know, my understanding of Revie was that he was just an utterly focused, consummate professional who was only interested in winning and wouldn't have been bothered about, you know, glad-handing or kind of like getting to know Brian Clough. And Clough seems to have taken that kind of as a personal slight.
Clough told his players during his first training session with a Leeds squad that had won several major trophies that they should chuck their medals in the bin, as they had won them all by cheating. Eddie Gray told us he spoke to Clough years later about his ill-fated spell in charge.
He actually says to me, I did it wrong when I come in. Brian's biggest problem was him and Don never really seen eye to eye. The two of them were great managers. I mean, although Brian Clough never did it at our club, he went on to prove to be one of the greatest managers the country's ever had. I mean, he won two European Cups at Forest, and Nottingham Forest are doing well.
Nottingham Forest have done it. The European Cup has come to Nottingham Forest.
As for Don's time as England manager, it wasn't much better. Author of Disrepute, Robert Endicott, explained how he struggled partly because he was unable to recreate that family atmosphere he built at Leeds.
Don Revie at Elland Road was a hands-on manager, of course, and saw the players virtually every day. With the England job, you rarely see the players, yet you've got to work with them and try and foster this family spirit, which is a great idea, but it's never going to work.
With results not going well, Revie faced a lot of criticism early on and sensed he was disliked by FA chairman Sir Harold Thompson. He was soon looking for a way out. On the 12th of July 1977, Revie revealed in an exclusive to the Daily Mail's Jeff Powell that he was quitting the England job to become manager of the UAE. It shocked the nation. But Duncan explained how his dad jumped before he was pushed.
He knew for a fact that he was going to get the sack, and he also knew that another manager had been tapped up for the job. It wasn't a rocket science either, because unless Italy, I think, lost to somebody, some minnow, then they were going to go through, and they subsequently went through. And a lot of people forget that in those days, only one team qualified. And so Italy pipped us to qualification and then went on to win the World Cup, by the way.
Author Robert Endicott said Don had become a different person to the one everyone saw at Leeds.
Don Revie, I think, was a more tense figure and more stressed figure than he had been at Leeds. Even though he certainly had his dark times there as well, but this was another level of darkness almost. And I think, if I remember rightly, Elsie mentioned how he was definitely not the cheerful person that she knew from recent times. And I think, he definitely struggled with it. His mental health probably suffered a little bit as well.
The FA suspended Revie from football for 10 years on a charge of bringing the game into disrepute, something which Revie contested in a lawsuit against the FA and was subsequently overturned. Many in the football world have since spoken out at the way Don was treated and felt it was incredibly harsh. Revie's reputation was certainly tarnished for a while by what had happened. He was seen as greedy and a failure. Son Duncan described how difficult it was at the time.
We felt that it was so unjust and it was so unfair. And the image that was then portrayed, and I think because the fact that it came out exclusive in one newspaper, the rest of the press turned on my dad. And I think that he might have done something different, but then Jeff did help us out on many things. And so he felt obliged in that respect as well.
In the years gone by, that special Leeds team under Don Revie had been spoken about in high regard. But it's fair to suggest outside of Leeds, they probably haven't been given the credit they deserve. There are many who feel they should have achieved a lot more. Eddie Gray certainly thinks so.
We still should have probably won more. I mean, going back to the 70 Cup final, we should have won the games. We never, but we should have won them. So whether it's luck or lack of concentration in certain areas, the one thing I will say that every year I played under Don, we were always challenges for the top trophies. And that in itself, you look back in that period in the club's history with a lot of pride.
Because of the amount of times Leeds finished runners-up in the league, the three FA Cup final defeats, the two European Cup finals they lost, it's perhaps fair to say Revie's legacy is one of respect rather than elite. But in the city of Leeds and walking around Elland Road, it's clear that Don and these players will forever go down in history as absolute legends. In spring 1988, a special reunion took place at Elland Road of the Leeds players and their old boss, Don Revie. Just a year later, Don sadly passed away from motor neuron disease. With so many of that incredible side passing away in only the last year or so, Peter Lorimer, Jack Charlton, Norman Hunter, Trevor Cherry, Terry Cooper, Mick Bates. Eddie Gray reflected on how hard it's been.
Friends, for instance, as I was a kid, Peter was my roommate all the time we played. Mick Bates and I grew up together on the ground staff and great mates. And great mates with a lot of the players. That's the thing about, you know, in later years, obviously, up to a couple of seasons ago, we used to see each other, you know. I would have an occasional party in the house and they'd all come round and, you know. And I still talk to Johnny Giles regular. But it's just so sad. So many of the players have passed away in such a short period of time. But what the players did for the football club, it'll never be forgotten in the city. and never forgotten, especially with Leeds United fans.
Is Don Revy appreciated and valued enough all these years later? A complex character, which meant he wasn't as revered in the same way as Bill Shankly and Brian Clough. One thing's for sure, Revy and that Leeds side will certainly never be forgotten. He did wonders for our club and city. It was a truly great side with some special individuals.
Here's Bremner, here Leeds. A good ball, nice ball to Gray. And a goal, a glorious goal, a superbly executed goal.
And here's Giles. It's there. Giles was equalised. Headed out to Bremner. A beautiful goal by Bremner. What cool thinking by Bremner. Jones in on it. And a goal. Oh, and what a goal. What a goal by Norman Hunter.
What you must remember is this. That team was written off by the press and television in 70, in 71, in 72, and in 73 when we lost against Sunderland and AC Milan, they all said, that's it. They're finished, they're over the hill, they're too old, and this, that and the other.
Cherry! Oh, he took up such a good position.
Charlton coming up into the penalty area. It's a goal!
Lorimer coming in! 1-1!
Oh, and what a goal! What a goal by Norman Hunter!
And last season, with all these injuries and all these suspensions, we only lost 4 matches out of 42 and won the championship. Our record is there to be seen for 11 years.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.